40 years ago today in New York City, a 15-year-old boy shot and killed a stranger on the subway. Over the next 2 weeks, Willie Bosket went on a crime spree. He murdered a second man, shot another, and eventually the police caught Bosket. Robert Silbering prosecuted the case.
In all my experience, I think that there are certain cases where for the protection of society, an individual has to be warehoused. I thought he was one of those.
But he wasn't locked up for life. He got the maximum sentence for a juvenile at the time, 5.5 years. Kari Pitkin of member station WNYC reports on the life of Willie Bosket, who practically grew up in the juvenile justice system and whose crimes served as the catalyst for its transformation.
Willie Bosket was raised in Harlem in the 1960s and 70s.
We are standing on the corner of 114th Street and Lenox Avenue.
I walked with Willie's childhood friend to the block they grew up on. She didn't want to use her name to protect her privacy.
So what floor was Willie's family on?
Right there on the first floor with his air conditioner in, right here in this building. And my building was on this side. Oh, man, just bringing back so many memories. We are the Corporettes, the mighty Corporettes.
The Corporettes. That was the name of her girl gang on 114th Street.
The mighty Corporettes are ready to fight.
She says the kids on the block had a lot of fun playing double dutch and tag.
Hot peas and butter, come and get your supper.
But they also saw people murdered, running inside when they heard gunshots. Between 1960 and 1978, arrest rates for violent juvenile crime had tripled in New York City.
We actually dodged bullets.
Willie stood out from all the other kids they grew up with. For one, he was smarter than most.
Spending any time with him at all, you knew that he was brilliant.
Fox Butterfield wrote the book All God's Children about Willie Bosket and his family.
I don't know how many people said to me, people who had worked with him, social workers, psychiatrists, had remarked at the time when they were working with Willie, he could grow up and become president.
The second reason Willie stood out, he was prone to extreme violence. By the time he was 9, he had lit a homeless man on fire, thrown a typewriter out the window at school, and attacked his sister after she tattled on him in front of their friend.
He was like, I'm gonna shut her mouth once and for all. And he ran in the kitchen and got the long cooking utensil, and he stuck the fork down her throat.
Willie's mom didn't know how to control him, so eventually she brought him to family court to ask for help. He wound up being sent away to a reform school, and over the next 4 years, Willie bounced in and out of institutions, causing mayhem everywhere. Until finally, at 14, he landed in Brookwood, a secure detention center for boys. There was no real therapy there, aside from some group sessions.
You know how I used to feel? I didn't care about nothing.
That's actually Willie's voice. This is from Alan and Susan Raymond's documentary film, Bad Boys.
Being a staff one day, all the money coming in, so that's why I'm going to follow them and be like them. That's why I don't care.
Willie, the thing is this.
And the staff didn't have a lot of training. But still, in New York in the mid-1970s, the state was reforming the system. And Brookwood's director was committed to that, trying to get kids back into the community, doing away with the more punitive approaches. They were also trying something new with Willie, giving him some privileges.
I'd be on my own. If I feel like the grass across the road need to be cut, I don't have to tell nobody where I'm going. I just go cut the grass. I was over there today riding lawnmower. I didn't tell nobody where I was going. You know, I feel free. Even though I'm locked up, I feel free.
Do you think this time you're going to stay out for good?
Yeah.
How long do you have to stay here before you can go home?
Well, I was supposed to get released Monday.
Oh, soon?
Right.
Is that for good? You're going to go home?
Yeah.
Soon after that interview, the Raymonds were filming in a hallway, and Willie ran at them, screaming, don't do that! And he smashed the camera in Alan's face, giving him a black eye.
Is your camera okay?
Willie was released in September 1977, unchanged, perhaps even more violent. And just 6 months later, Willie and his cousin, Herman Spates, spent 10 days riding the trains, robbing people and spreading violence. Willie murdered 2 men. Because of the laws at the time, he was tried in family court and could only be sentenced to a maximum of 5.5 years. The governor, Hugh Carey, called on the state legislature to change the juvenile justice laws in New York.
This case has me outraged. As far as sentencing is concerned, as a practical matter, if this person is mentally unfit to be in society, the person will stay within secure lockup for life.
Carey got his law, so kids as young as 13 can be tried in adult criminal court if they commit murder. But Willie was not affected by the Juvenile Offender Act. He got out at 21 and soon after was rearrested on an attempted armed robbery charge. Once back inside prison, Willie was more incorrigible than ever. He lit fires and stabbed a guard, getting an additional sentence of 25 years to life. Almost no one visits Willie in prison now, but they used to.
We get up like 5, 4 in the morning, get to the bus station around 6. We'd arrive about 7:30. It's like 1.5, 2 hours away.
This is his niece, Danielle. When she was a kid, she used to go visit Willie with his mom, who also raised her.
And then he would come out of his room, which was locked, and then into the special cell they built for him visiting. And it was like a plexiglass with holes in it. But even the holes didn't match up so he could hear, but he could never be able to stick anything through the glass if he wanted to.
You heard that right. The Department of Correction built a plexiglass cell just for Willie. Through the plexiglass, Willie taught Danielle to read and write and the names of the 206 bones in the human body.
He was like my dad. He tried, like, and it's unfair because it's a life, like, gone. And I'm not saying, you know, he didn't do bad things. It's just that, unfortunately, the system failed him.
I asked Danielle what she thought about the law created after the murders.
I think that changing the laws is somewhat necessary because they are children that are incorrigible. You have to kind of wonder what kind of human being as a child can stomach a murder. I can stomach to watch it on TV and it's fake. So something is wrong. Society has gotten so hard that when we see that, it's like, oh, this person is terrible. We judge them. We don't say something is wrong. What do we do to fix it?
Willie isn't in that specially designed plexiglass cell anymore, but he remains in solitary confinement, where he's been for the past 29 years. Since the Juvenile Offender Act of 1978 was passed in the wake of Willie's sentencing, states across the country adopted similar legislation. And now, some 100,000 kids a year under the age of 18 are tried in adult criminal court. For NPR News, I'm Kari Pitkin.
This story was reported as part of WNYC's Caught, a new podcast about the juvenile justice system.